You know, it's really important to me that, especially all of us, especially the younger generation, that they don't have an expectation that God has not offered them. God has offered growing, hoping, substantial, thriving life and difficulty and challenges. And to tell or to sell anything else is just to do great harm to people and to miss really the depth of what God is up to in our lives. So perspective is a word that like a lot of words, has evolved over the years in its usage. It was first used to describe optics in the 15th century using lenses. Glasses were actually a couple hundred years old already by then, but they used it to describe how glasses can change your perspective. Yeah, you can actually see. In the 16th century, it was used to describe drawing objects in art. They already did this, but it was used to describe drawing objects in art to give them depth or distance. So to either draw a triangle and it makes it look like the railroad tracks are going out into the distance. There's what's called forced perspective, which has always been there, but it's become more popular in the digital age where you force this perspective on people. You know, that's not real. And in the 17th century, it was used for the first time to describe a mental thing, something going on inside of you, where a person can have a very different perspective than another person on the same thing. So, for instance, here's an event, rain. That's an event. Here's a perspective, a farmer during drought. Another perspective, a bride with an outdoor wedding planned. Two different perspectives on the exact same event. Now, maybe the bride is very sad that her wedding is rained on, but maybe the farmer is her fiancé, so this is ruining her wedding and paying her rent at the same time. So very different perspective. God sees with perfect clarity what's actually there. Everywhere, all the time, his perspective is perfect. He understands with perfect clarity how we should see and respond to what's there. And he's given us his word in order to see in here what's real out there and how to respond appropriately, how to respond in a way that causes us to thrive. The scriptures are the story of reality. What's really true about the world and God and us? How do we live in line with what's there? That's also called a worldview. Everyone has a worldview. Not everyone has a worldview that's accurate, because reality is what it is, and some people's views in here of what's out there are accurate and some are not. Now, it's commonly believed that sincerity in here is what most matters in terms of a worldview, or personal autonomy. No one can tell me what to believe. But really, people don't believe either one of those if pressed on it, because no sane person believes that sincerity will allow you to breathe water and not die, or that stubborn commitment to autonomy would make you float if you jumped off of a cliff. We all know that reality, not sincerity, not a desire for autonomy, is what matters most when it comes to the facts of the universe. This is our last week of Advent. We've looked at active waiting, how we are all waiters. It's what it means to be a human. And it's more like being a watchman than taking a nap. And waiting is difficult work. All through scriptures, waiting is difficult work, especially when you're waiting for difficult circumstances to change. Waiting is not like a sci-fi movie where you go into suspended animation and then you get to wake up a few decades of space travel later and you skip the boring parts, the difficult parts. We wait through the difficult parts. So we're waiting on God for a hope for a future. We're waiting with God in the present. He's not absent in the waiting, but it can feel that way. Everyone in here who's waited through difficult times, who is waiting through difficult times, can feel like God is absent. That's why perspective is important. Remember, perspective has an objective side, what's real out there. It has a subjective side. How do we think and feel on the inside about what's happening out there? Rain is great, rain is terrible. God is always present and at work in the world around us. This is true regardless of our perception. But the challenge is for us to close a gap on what's actually true about the world we live in and our perception of it. And again, this is really hard when the waiting is difficult. So consider John the Baptist, this great man of God who had been sent to reveal Jesus as the Messiah. He enjoyed years of living in the open air freedom of the wilderness. He was doing his best to obey God. Clearly a man called and chosen by God, and now he's been locked up in this terrible prison just east of the Dead Sea, a desolate area. Here's a man who's been enjoying wide open spaces, following God. Now he's in this foul prison cell. If you can imagine the worst possible circumstances, imagine a first century prison cell near the Dead Sea. So do you think he's going to struggle mentally, spiritually, emotionally? You would be right if you say yes. In Matthew 11, when John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" Less than 3 years later, he's the one who said to Jesus walked by, "Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." And now he's struggling with doubt. His perception is challenged by his circumstances. And the Lord doesn't rebuke him. He sends back encouragement to say, "Go tell him, yeah, I'm the one. Even though you're in a prison cell, I'm the one." So, like John, like the scriptures are honest with struggles, we can be honest with our struggles. Matter of fact, if we're not honest with our struggles, then their struggles are going to undermine us. But we can grow. We can grow. We can close the gap. For instance, consider the Apostle Paul's growth in his own perception of circumstances. He said, "I know what it is to be in need," and that was true. "And I know what it is to have plenty." He said, "But I've learned the secret of being content in any and every circumstance, whether living in plenty or want, whether well-fed or hungry." And so his circumstances were what they were. He was hungry, he was getting beaten, he was shipwrecked, but his perception of circumstances grew. He had learned, he said. He said, what was his secret? "I can do all things through him that gives me strength." He learned over time, he'd grown. So imagine human history, it's not hard to do, or imagine your own history as this line, or maybe a ray because it had a beginning, but this line with some X's on it. The X's are the big things, the things people are waiting for. So let's think about biblical history. Isaac is born after this long wait. Moses shows up after a long wait. They enter Canaan after a long wait, put an X there. Then they go into Babylonian exile and they come back after a 70-year wait, another big X. Then 400 years of silence between Malachi and Matthew, a big X, Jesus shows up. Think about your own life. Draw a line in your mind and put the X's on there. Graduate, get a job, get married, have kids, promotion, retirement, big vacation, health recovers. And then think about the X's that are out there in the future that you're waiting for. And maybe there's a long time between the last X and the next X. When is that going to come? If you look at your life that way, or biblical history or human history that way, there is a whole lot more line than X. In the history of humanity, our own personal history, the X's stand out, but most of life is the line. And God is moving in history, and there are these occasional markers, these X's, but the markers are to drive us to faithfulness all along the line. Most of what God is doing is line, not X. Even in the life of Christ, we have some things written down, these X's, but the line was much fuller than what we have record of. So at the end of the Gospel of John, he said, "Jesus did many other things as well. If everyone were written down, I suppose even the whole world couldn't contain the books." And so for Advent, we started with Exodus, this long line, 400 years, and then this big X. The people are set free. And then another long line, and then 40 years, and then another X, and making it to Canaan. Then we looked at the prophecy of Jesus on week 2 and how Isaiah looked forward to a time pretty soon where the northern kingdom would fall. It did, X. A couple hundred years later, the south would fall, X. And then he looked all the way forward to Jesus when he would come, another X. And then last week we looked at the coming of Jesus and how he fulfilled the promises of the past, gives us hope in the future. Today we're going to jump all the way to the end and see the big X action of God at the second advent of Christ. Let me read from the last book in the Bible, Revelation 21. "Then I saw a new heaven." This is symbolic language describing a reality, a little reality. Symbolic language describing a little reality. "Then I saw a new heaven, a new earth, but the first heaven and first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He was seated on the throne and said, 'I am making everything new.' Then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.'" When he talked about there being no sea, it doesn't mean the new heavens and new earth is going to be a desolate place with no ocean. The sea was symbolic of all that was chaotic and dangerous and dark at that time. The Revelation was written by John, not John the Baptist, but John, a man who suffered much, who would die for his faith eventually. And he was able to see into the future. God allowed him to see into the future what was going to happen. And part of what he was allowed to see was the same as that as what Isaiah 700 years earlier had seen through the vision God gave him. A new heaven and a new earth. And so as you think about, hey, guys, y'all be still. Somebody, Roger, Bubba, make sure those guys, I don't know where Jared is, but make sure those guys. So I have to, every so often I got to instill fear of Terry into the youth. So the future, what he's talking about is the future is not floating around as disembodied spirits in a cloud-like existence. The future is like the past. It's a creation of God, a new creation of God, a physical place for a physical people. And though our future is a concrete existence, the language that he uses here is symbolic. And he describes this city coming down from heaven. And the significance of that symbolism is that the first Jerusalem, this real place, this real city, was a place where God's promises were fulfilled and his presence was experienced. And so God promised that he would make them a people with a place where his presence would be with them, and he did. Israel was the people, Jerusalem was the place, the temple was his presence. And then their sin would cost him all of that. They'd be taken away, they'd lose all that. But God had not abandoned his promises. This is the story of the Old Testament. This is the story of human history. And eventually those promises pointed to Jesus, the Messiah, who would make a new people, who would dwell in God's presence in an eternal place. The future is a recreation story. And so this is where it's important to stop and remember to not be tripped up by the strangeness barrier. As we talk about biblical things in the past and the future, it's so different from where we live. I mean, we live in a world of stuff and politics and food and chairs and sleepy. And so when you start thinking about this stuff, it can just sound so strange, it can be of little practical use. But something's going to happen in the future. And there's limited number of views of that. Either there's going to be endless cycles of reincarnation of human beings and of the cosmos, or we're going to cease to exist and nobody's going to ever care or know that the cosmos will cease to exist. There's another view. There's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. All of it sounds strange because we can't imagine any of it, but for option three, we have some very credible witnesses to that reality of the future. We have Jesus, the Messiah who rose from the dead, and we have Scripture who tells us to trust what it says about the future. Why don't we do that? Because in the past, it spoke about a future that is now passed to us, and it was true. Specifically, it said Jesus will rise from the dead. Jesus said, I'll rise from the dead, and he did. Now he said, now trust me when I say this is what's coming. So let me give you 3+1 reasons to trust the Scripture in regards to your future. One, as I mentioned, accuracy and prediction. It predicted what was going to come. It happened in amazing detail, over and over and over. Accuracy and description. It describes a world that's full of purpose and design, a world of beginning, a world that's coming to an end, a world of order and love and meaning, and a world that's broken, out of order, searching for purpose. And so when I look around and see the world, when I look inside me, I look at Scripture, I think that describes what I see in here and out there. And then accuracy and prescription, meaning it says, if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. Exactly. Just what you'd expect from a real, accurate prescription of how to live life. And then fourth, Jesus himself trusted the Scriptures. So how does trusting the Scriptures take on the future lead to a different perspective in the present? So let's think about, let's leave the line and X analogy for a minute. Let's think about another analogy. Think about your perspective as being an old radio with a couple of tuning dials. One dial is future, one dial is present. If you dial too much of one, static, wrong perspective. Dial too much of the other, static, wrong perspective. You've got to get them just right. And our brains are not these digital radios with presets. You got to keep your hands on both dials if you want to get music and not static. The transmitter, God and his word are perfect. Our receiver, our perspective require constant attention. So let me look at a passage that describes this struggle for perspective with us, for us. And he's got two hands, a hand on each dial, future, present. Therefore, we don't lose heart. So make sure you don't become discouraged. Make sure you keep perspective. Though outwardly, you're wasting away. Your circumstances can be disheartening. Inwardly, you're being renewed day by day. God is renewing you on the inside. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Now, he didn't have light and momentary troubles. He had very difficult troubles. And there he's dialing it in. He's comparing his present troubles with the weight of the glory of the future. Very difficult perspective to maintain. You got to keep your hands on those dials. He says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen, because what is seen is temporary. What's unseen is eternal. So he's dialing it in, getting perspective. He said, now we know if this earthly tent we live in is destroyed, he's talking about his body. A tent is a temporary dwelling. Our body's a temporary dwelling, this body. We have an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. So when we die, we will live on, turn that future dial. Meanwhile, okay, turn that present dial, be honest. Meanwhile, we groan. Life is difficult. We long to be clothed with that future body. So he's living in this already not yet life. We're longing for this existence that God has promised us, but meanwhile in this life, we groan. The fact is, every human being, no matter where they are, some human beings are very aware of the fact that this life is not all there is, and they very acutely feel the groaning. I have friends in my life who feel it acutely. But even the people who are doing really well, when they get still and they get honest, there's a sense in which there's a longing there. And people who spend their whole life working for an X, they get the X, and they're disappointed. Why? Because this is not going to deliver. Not fully. It doesn't mean you don't enjoy it. But people who live for the X's and don't experience God on the line, when they get the X's, they become, they move into despair. Post-gold medal, Olympic gold medal depression is a real thing. People spend their lives for the gold medal, the big X. They get the big X, and the next day they're thinking, it didn't fix me. That's it. So we long for what's to be. And this longing can drive us to God or drive us to folly. That's what I was talking to Casey and John about, this wall. You hit the wall and the groaning, and it can drive people to folly, like I give up and despair, I'm going to anesthetize the pain, or it can drive us to God. God himself is what my heart longs for. And then he says, while we're in this tent, this temporary dwelling, we groan and we're burdened because we don't want to be unclothed, but to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling. He's saying we're groaning now because we're looking for and we're built for eternity. And now as God who made us for this very purpose and has given us his Spirit, the Spirit as a down payment, a deposit guaranteeing what's to come. So it's interesting because in the Gospel of John, Jesus was said to have put on flesh and made his dwelling among us. And the word used for dwelling was the same word here, a tent. It was also, by the way, the same word used for tabernacle. Remember if you were here when we talked about Exodus, how God's presence was in this temporary dwelling that they carried with them. That was a tabernacle. And John says that Jesus tabernacled among us. He pitched his tent among us. And now we pitch our tent. And here's where we get into really good perspective. You got both hands on the dials. Therefore, we're confident, as long as we're home in the body, we're away from the Lord. Meaning, this is not all there is. We have confidence. We know it's going to come. We live by faith, not by sight. He said again, we're confident. We'd rather be done with the groaning, but in the meantime, we make it our goal to please God, whether we're at home in the body or away from it. So that's when you're dialed in, the music is happening. You're dialed in the future and the present. So our goal is to please him, be found faithful here and now, because our future is sure. Difficult waiting can be a barrier for some, a bridge to others. So the last month, we've looked at God's activity in the history of Israel. It's an amazing, inspiring story. And one day we'll see very clearly his movement in all of human history, not just in biblical history. He's written his name into human history. But just like history declares the glory of God, the heavens declare the glory of God as well. So let me go there for just a minute, then I'll tell you why. Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. So there are about, they say, 100 billion stars in our galaxy, and there are billions of galaxies. The average distance between those stars is 30 trillion miles. How far is 30 trillion miles? If you jumped on a space shuttle, went top speed, 17,000 miles an hour, you'd get there in a mere 200,000 years. That's between two stars in our galaxy. How many stars in the whole universe? They say as many stars they estimate in the universe as there are grains of sand on the entire Earth. Now, what's that have to do with perspective and waiting? Let me read from our old friend Isaiah again. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One. Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He brings out the starry hosts one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. So why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God? Why do you say, O Eric, why do you say, O Terry, my way is hidden? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow weary or tired. His understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary, increases the power of the weak. Even youth grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They'll soar on wings like eagles. They'll run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not faint. So our perspective needs to be continually dialed into the reality of God. He's in charge of the history of the heavens, the history of the earth, and the history of the cosmos. He's in charge of your history and your place in the cosmos. So what we want to do is continually close the gap on the perspective of what God is really doing out there and how we see it in here. We're not creating reality by changing our perspective, but we can either be aligned inside here with what's real out there or not. And how we're aligned in here has everything to do with how we thrive or fail to thrive in the real world that God is at work in. So, Rodney, come on up. You guys, bring your team on up. We're not going to end on a gloomy note. We're going to end on an upbeat note. And the Bible talks about how we're to rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And the reality is all of us at different points of our life, both of those are going on at one time. And so we rejoice in our hope while we're clear-eyed and realistic about the struggles and the challenges. And so this morning my heart was breaking as I was reading about the tsunami in Indonesia. And again, you know, this one is not to the magnitude of back in 2004 or 2005, but still, every day there are people's lives are being destroyed or altered, and every day around us that's happening. And so we need to look at that and have perspective and pray and mourn, and then we need to go back to the gospel hope and rejoice.